This is John Wilkerson, host of the Wired Homeschool. It's no secret that you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast on the Great Commission Transmission Network.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the Hall of Fire in the last homely house east of the sea, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 20. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, don't adventures ever have an end? Heck no, because we're still in book 2, chapter 1 of The Fellowship of the Ring, Many Meetings, part 3. We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here at the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Our first 3-part chapter.
Yeah.
Here on the Secret Fire Podcast. Yep. And we have made it to episode number 20, guys. I feel that indicates that this podcast, this show, is firmly established.
You think so?
Don't you think? Doesn't it feel like that? Episode 20?
When you get to a quarter of 100, then it's established.
A quarter of a century?
A fifth of a hundred?
25. Well, we're at a fifth.
Yeah, we're at a fifth.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Five more to go.
Yeah, there you go.
So we had last week, what did we cover last week? The feast. The feast honor of Frodo.
Yes.
We met my wee lad Gimli's dad.
Gloin.
Gloin.
That's right.
A very important elf. Dwarf, in appearance.
We also met a very important elf.
We did. A few of them.
Quite a few. Well, of course, we saw Glorfindel. Gandalf, he's a wizard, he's not an elf. We got closer to Elrond.
Oh, I don't think Frodo's never met Elrond.
He hasn't met him, but he got close to him.
He was close to him.
He
was being, no, well, and Elrond healed Frodo, but Frodo wasn't aware of
that.
Oh,
that's true, of course, yes. And we also met Arwen.
Oh, boy, who was so like in appearance to Elrond that Frodo immediately said, she must be a close kindred.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And some wonderful, beautiful, poetic language.
Oh yeah,
regarding her. Yes, and the majesty, and we talked a little bit about the names that were written on them. These, mm-hmm. Metaphorically speaking, right?
Yes.
Great power, like kings and lords, and so Frodo is just absolutely amazed that he is witnessing this scene. At the feast itself, and then when the feast is over, they're led into the Hall of Fire,
and those
minstrels start up their sweet music.
They strike up the band.
And Frodo sees, over down at the end of the hall, a little figure.
A dark little figure.
Sitting on a stool, mm-hmm. leaning against a pillar.
Sitting and thinking.
With a drink on the floor, with a piece of bread. And then Elrond goes over there, and then he motions Frodo mm-hmm. to come over. Oh, goodness. Why was this not in the book? I mean, in the movie. It is in the book.
What are we talking about here?
Yeah. Why do I do that?
I don't know. It's okay, but...
It was just played out completely differently. And
They still had a very good, connection, or not a connection, but a...
Well, a meeting.
Interaction.
Yeah.
Between Frodo
Wouldn't
and Bilbo.
Would you like to have seen the Hall of Fire, though?
Well, and, obviously.
And for those that are watching on our video right now, whether you're watching live via twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast, or if you are watching this video after the fact on our YouTube channel,
hey,
I'll switch over here to a view of the Hall of Fire as depicted in the Lord of the Rings online. Get those tables out of there! All right.
What are they doing?
Anybody, did you have anything that you wanted to clarify? Any afterthoughts? Anything from the last episode?
Nah.
Okay.
Not me.
I don't think that we give much thought to previous episodes. We just trudge on.
Yeah, just okay. Barrel on through.
So, Brendan, why don't you back us up so we can get a running start to where we left off?
Okay. Well, let's pick it up where, on page 230.
Okay.
In the Kindle edition, location 230. Elrond went forward. We kind of already briefly talked about this. Elrond went forward and stood beside the silent figure. "Awake, little master," he said, with a smile. And then turning to Frodo, he beckoned to him. "Now at last the hour has come that you have wished for, Frodo," he said. "Here is a friend you have long missed." And the dark figure raised its head and uncovered its face. "Bilbo!" cried Frodo with sudden recognition, and he sprang forward. "Hello, Frodo, my lad," said Bilbo. "So you have got here at last. I hoped you would manage it well, well. So all this feasting is in your honor, I hear. I hope you enjoyed yourself." "Yes, yes. Why weren't you there?" cried Frodo. "And why haven't I been allowed to see you before?" "Because you were asleep. And I have seen a good deal of you. I've sat by your side with Sam each day. But as for the feast, I don't go in for such things now. I had something else to do." "What were you doing?" "Why, sitting and thinking. I do a lot of that nowadays. And this is the best place to do it in, as a rule." "Wake up indeed," he said, cocking an eye at Elrond. There was a bright twinkle in it, and no sign of sleepiness that Frodo could see. "Wake up? I was not asleep, Master Elrond. If you want to know, I was all come out from your... you have all come out from your feast too soon, and you have disturbed me in the middle of making up a song. I was stuck over a line or two and was thinking about them, but now I don't suppose I shall ever get them again. Or get them right.
Yes. He's all flustered.
Who, Bilbo? Yes. There will be such a deal of singing that the ideas will be driven clean out of my head. I shall have to get my friend the Dunadan.
Yeah, Dunas.
To help me. Where is he? Elrond laughed. He shall be found, he said. Then you two shall go into the corner and finish your task, and we will hear it and judge it before we end our merrymaking. And messengers were sent out to find Bilbo's friend, though none knew where he was or why he had not been present at the feast. Okay.
Mystery.
Any thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I wonder if we'll find out. There you go. That's my thoughts.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
In the meanwhile, Frodo and Bilbo sat side by side, and Sam came quickly and placed himself near them. They talked together in soft voices, oblivious to the mirth and music in the hall about them. Bilbo had not much to say of himself. When he had left Hobbiton, he had wandered off aimlessly along the road or in the country on either side, but somehow he had steered all the time toward Rivendell. I think we talked briefly about that last week, how it's just cool that he didn't really set out for Rivendell, but he still got there.
Yes.
It's pretty cool. "I got here without much adventure," he said, "and after a rest, I went on with the dwarves to Dale, my last journey. I shan't travel again. Old Balin has gone away." Does that mean that Balin has died?
Oh, we don't know.
We don't know yet.
It's just he's gone away.
He's gone away. Okay. "Old Balin has gone away. And then I came back here. And here I have been. I've done this and that. I've written some more of my book. And, of course, I make up a few songs. They sing them occasionally just to please me, I think. For, of course, they aren't really good enough for Rivendell."
Keep in mind that at this point, Bilbo is still in sole possession of the Red Book.
Yes, the Red Book of Westmarch.
Yes.
Yes. "And I listen and I think. Time doesn't seem to pass here. It just is. A remarkable place altogether." Time doesn't pass here. It goes back to, I guess it was in this same chapter, where... Gandalf was speaking about the rest of the world was getting dark and it was becoming winter, but inside Rivendell and around this property, it's like summer just hangs around.
Yes, yes.
"So, hey. I hear all kinds of news from over the mountains and out of the south, but hardly anything from the Shire. I heard about the ring, of course, and Gandalf has been here often. Not that he has told me a great deal. He has become closer than ever these last few years." Closer meaning more secretive.
Yes. Yeah. Shut up.
Yes. I'm trying to talk here.
Shut up. Oh, sorry. There's no way around that. I couldn't fix that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's all good.
Pardon me. I have Tourette's. Okay.
The Dunadan has told me more. Fancy that ring of mine causing such a disturbance. And that's where we actually left off last week. It is a pity that Gandalf did not find out more sooner. I could have brought the ring here myself long ago without so much trouble. I have thought several times of going back to Hobbiton for it. But I am getting old and they would not let me. Gandalf and Elrond, I mean. They seemed to think that the enemy was looking high and low for me and would make mincemeat out of me if he caught me tottering about in the wild.
You know, we did talk a little bit about this. Let me hit it from just a slightly different angle this time because we made it clear, or it has been made clear in the text itself, that that Bilbo's task was over. He did what he needed to do.
He was the ring finder.
Yes, yeah. And now Frodo is the ring bearer. But just reading the way that he talks right now, you know, and Bilbo is a wise hobbit, okay, but you just get the impression that he does not understand the evil of that ring, right? I mean, because he's like talking just so flippantly. Oh, I could have done this and I could and saved everybody the trouble. You know, that I think is where Gandalf and Elrond, they have not been able to impress on him the danger of that ring. Do you get that impression?
Mm-hmm. I think so. Now, do you think that's a result of the attachment he has to the ring?
Partially, I believe so. I wasn't even thinking that, but when you verbalize that, now that it's out here for all of us to listen to, I think that's a big part of it. He had that ring for 60 years. Mm-hmm. And the power that it had on, and going back to make sure that we are absolutely clear that that Gandalf was surprised by how little of an effect that ring had on him. You know, he had already said, hobbits fade reluctantly, okay? Mm-hmm. But more specifically, there are certain hobbits that fade even more reluctantly.
Yeah.
And Bilbo and Frodo are two of them. But getting back to my main point, perhaps the ring has altered his perception of it. You know,
mm-hmm. Definitely.
He's just not able to comprehend how bad it is.
And Frodo and Bilbo are related to which founding hobbits? The Fallowhides? Is that them?
Or
am I overstating that? No. Harfoots.
Yeah.
Harfoots. They do have Fallowhide, and they do have
prodigious ones, the short, and you know, the ones that you think of normally, like living in holes and stuff. Harfoots.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
The most numerous.
Okay.
The three kinds.
For some reason, I was thinking of the Fallowhide brothers, were they?
Yeah, Marcho and Blanco.
Yes.
But they do have a little bit of Fallowhide in them.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Fallowhide is like Tookish, almost.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Like, oh, okay. Yes. Okay, gotcha. Side. All right. Okay. All right,
and cool. Bilbo's mom is Belladonna Took.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and Frodo has Took.
He's no fool of a Took.
No, he is not. Well, he could be.
Fool of a Took.
No. The way he's talking right now, so flippantly and nonchalant about the ring, I think that that Gandalf and Elrond would say, you're being foolish about this. You're treating it too lightly. It's just some thoughts.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what we're here for, is thoughts.
That's right. Continuing on. And Gandalf said, Bilbo continues, the ring has passed on. The ring has passed on, Bilbo. It would do you no good. It would do no good to you or to others if you tried to meddle with it again. Odd sort of remark, just like Gandalf. But he said he was looking after you, so I let things be. And I am frightfully glad to see you safe and sound. And then he paused and looked at Frodo doubtfully. Have you got it here? Oh, let me try that again. Have you got it here? He asked in a whisper.
Yeah. All furtively.
Yeah. I can't help feeling curious, you know, after all I've heard. I should very much like to peep at it again. Yes, I've got it, answered Frodo, feeling a strange reluctance. It looks just the same as it ever did. Well, I should just like to see it just for a moment, said Bilbo. And when he had dressed, Frodo found that while he was sleeping, the ring had been hung around his neck on a new chain, light but strong. Slowly he drew it out, Bilbo put out his hand, but Frodo quickly drew back the ring. To his distress and amazement, he found that he was no longer looking at Bilbo. A shadow seemed to have fallen between them, and through it he found himself eyeing a little wrinkled creature with a hungry face and bony groping hands. He felt a desire to strike him. The music and the singing around them seemed to falter and fell into and the silence fell. Bilbo looked quickly at Frodo's face and passed his hand across his eyes. "I understand now," he said. "Put it away, and I'm sorry. Sorry you have come in for this burden. Sorry about everything. Don't adventures ever have an end?" "I suppose not. Someone else always has to carry on the story." "Well, it can't be helped. I wonder if it's any good trying to finish my book. But don't let's worry about it now. Let's have some real news. Tell me about the Shire."
What do you think about that statement that he made, or that question? Don't adventures ever have an end? I suppose not. Someone else always has to carry on the story.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I think he felt humbled when he said it, because I feel like with Bilbo, with the accomplishment of finding the ring, there was a lot of pride. And he was, you know, he could say that he was proud that he found it, that he won it off of Gollum in a game of riddles, in Riddles in the Dark. You know, he's proud that he's had this ring for so long. And when he realizes that the ring still has, when he realizes that the ring is still important and that it's not just some trinket anymore, he kind of feels humble that he's no longer necessary. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, there's that. So there is that a little bit of an elegiac lament? Elegiac lament?
Oh, you know, I would believe so.
Yeah.
I would believe so. Because, yeah, he says, don't adventures ever have an end. That, I mean, yeah, talking about the...
I think this whole...
The finality
segment,
of something?
Everything that he's saying right here is a little bit of a elegiac lament. Something to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like he now feels useless. And like Bilbo himself cannot do anything else.
There's a little bit of him feeling, or potentially him feeling the need to justify his own existence. What good am I now?
Yeah, he needs affirmation. He needs some affirmation.
And so you know what's going to help him feel better? Tell me about the Shire.
Yeah, yeah.
How about some news?
Exactly. Frodo hid the ring away, and the shadow passed, leaving hardly a shred of memory. The light and the music of Rivendell was about him again. Bilbo smiled and laughed happily. Every item of news from the Shire that Frodo could tell, aided and corrected now again by Sam, was of the greatest interest to him. From the felling of the least tree to the pranks of the smallest children in Hobbiton, they were so deep in the doings of the four farthings that they did not notice the arrival of a man clad in dark green cloth. For many minutes, he had stood looking down at them with a smile. And suddenly, Bilbo looked up. "Ah, there you are at last, Dunadan," he said, or he cried. "Strider?" said Frodo. "You seem to have a lot of names." "Well, Strider..." Excuse me. "Well..."
No, this is Bilbo.
Oh, this is... Okay. Yeah. "Well, Strider is one that I haven't heard before anyway," said Bilbo. "What do you call him that for?" "They call me that in Bree," said Strider, laughing. "And that is how I was introduced to him." "And why do you call him Dunadan?" asked Frodo.
The
Dunadan," said Bilbo. "He is often called that here, but I thought you knew enough of Elvish to at least know Dun Adan, man of the West, Numenorean. But this is not the time for lessons." He turned to Strider. "Where have you been, my friend? Why weren't you at the feast? The Lady Arwen was there."
Oh,
look at Bilbo trying to start the pot.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yep. Strider looked down at Bilbo gravely. "I know," he said. "But often I've put mirth aside.
I must put mirth aside.
Eladan and Elohir..." Oh, hey, there they are.
Hey! Micah was right!
But I'll still be right later on as well.
Oh, okay.
Eladon and Elro here have returned out of the wild unlooked for, and they had tidings that I wish to hear at once. Well, my dear fellow, said Bilbo, now you've heard the news, can't you spare me a moment? I want your help in something urgent. Elrond says this song of mine is to be finished before the end of the evening, and I am stuck. Let's go off to a corner and polish it up. Strider smiled. Come then, he said. Let me hear it.
I love that camaraderie.
Yeah.
You know, and okay, going back to a complaint that you received or an objection to you even participating in this show, Brendan.
That I received? What?
Tolkien spends 6 pages describing a tree branch.
Oh, that thing, yeah.
Was this essential to move the story along?
Not really.
I wouldn't say essential, but it makes it a better story.
It enriches it.
Yeah, why move on with the story if it's bare bones, you know?
Yeah.
It's like seasoning, isn't it?
Yeah, it adds flavor.
You know, and we get just these glimpses of this camaraderie, and I just love this whole segment that we just went through. I like that when Strider is talking about, well, they call me that in Bree, and he's laughing. You know, he's saying, it is absurd. I have all kinds of names.
Yeah.
You know, this. I just like that. And Bilbo, who is, again, he is a very wise, a very intelligent hobbit. It's just he is naive. He has a veil over his eyes, so to speak, when it comes to the ring, and it's evil. But just the camaraderie of, come on, I need you. I need you for something urgent. You know, Elrond says this must be done, and I'm just so thankful for these embellishments and for these for the seasoning of the story. I'm thankful for 6 pages being given to describe a tree branch.
Yeah.
It makes it more real.
I'm starting to be more as well. So, well, that's just me.
But, oh, and one thing, when he asks where Strider has been, he looks down at Bilbo gravely. I know, he said. I know that Arwen was here. But often I must put mirth aside. What does that indicate? He's got...
Or remind me what mirth means. I don't use it.
Merrymaking.
Oh, okay. So he's just willing to set aside diversion. Yeah, he's got work to do. He's got a job to do.
Yeah.
And he's willing to set aside the merrymaking and the mirth to do it.
For the benefit of others.
Yeah.
The Numenoreans, who are the Rangers now, of course, Strider is the Numenorean. He is the Man of the West. He is the Dun Adan. His mission comes before all other things. And we're going to be very thankful for that as the story unfolds.
There you go. Frodo was left to himself for a while, for Sam had fallen asleep. He was alone and felt rather forlorn, although all about him the folk of Rivendell were gathered. But those near him were silent, intent upon the music of the voices and the instruments, and they gave no heed to anything else. Frodo began to listen. At first, the beauty of the melodies and of the interwoven words in elven tongues, even though he understood them little, held him in a spell. And as soon as he began to attend to them, it almost seemed that the words took shape in visions of far lands and bright things that he had never yet imagined opened out before him. The fire lit hall became like a golden mist above seas of foam that sighed upon the margins of the world. And then the enchantment became more and more dreamlike, until he felt an endless river of swelling gold and silver was flowing over him, too multitudinous for its pattern to be comprehended. It became part of the throbbing air about him, and it drenched and drowned him. Swiftly, he sank under its shining weight into a deep realm of sleep. Wow.
Poetic. Wow.
Yeah. And there he wandered. He wandered long in a dream of music that turned into running water, and then suddenly into a voice. It seemed to be the voice of Bilbo chanting verses. Faint at first, and then clearer ran the words. Now, are we going to bullet through this this poem?
Oh, man, it'll take like 10 calendar months to get through, like, it's 5 pages long or something.
Let's just talk a little bit about who this is about.
Okay.
So Arendil was a mariner that tarried in Arvernian. Arvernian, I don't know. He built a boat of timber felled in Nimbrothel to journey in. The word means sea friend. Arendil, the mariner, sea friend. You pronounce it. I don't know how to pronounce it, really. Just say Arendil. Yeah. But he is also half-elven and an important figure in the legends of the Elder Days. Descended from all the three houses of the Edain, he was the first known person to reach Amon in the First Age. He was crucial in the War of Wrath. Wrath. And a patriarch to the line of the kings of Numenor through his son, Elros.
Okay, what's a patriarch?
A father.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so we will get into this more in the appendices when we complete this.
All right.
But Elros is Elrond's brother. And they, just real quick, just to give Brendan a little taste of what we're going to learn about, the brothers were given a choice as a reward for valiant deeds they could choose to be of mankind or of elvenkind. Elros chose to be a man. He's really the father of the Numenoreans.
Okay.
He was given, because he chose that, he was given the gift of men, and he was given the gift of extraordinary life, long life.
Okay.
So the Numenoreans, the high men, they lived even back then, even more so, much longer than common man.
What was it, like 200 years?
200 or 300 years, I'm thinking. We'll get to that. And then by the time of Strider, of Aragorn, that length had shortened, but he still lived to be very old, very old. And so I'm excited to talk about this. And then conversely, Elrond chose to be of elvenkind. Mm-hmm. And that's why he is Elrond, half elven.
Okay.
Interesting stuff. Yes. Looking forward to getting into that. So this is a poem about their father, Arendil. And, a great, fascinating study. There's so many things. And again, thank you, Professor, for not just writing us a story, but writing us a history, a legend, a myth, mm-hmm. And anyway, so the we could go on and on, and this all ties in with Tuor and King Turgon, and Arendil was raised as a child in Gondolin. Oh, exciting stuff. Okay, so that's what this poem is about. So when you guys are going on your own and you're reading through, as Micah said, what, 5 pages of song, it really is long. We get down to page 236, and Brendan, you can pick it up from there.
Yes, sir. The chanting ceased. Frodo opened his eyes and saw that Bilbo was seated on his stool in a circle of listeners who were smiling and applauding. Now we better have it again, said an elf. Bilbo got up and bowed. I am flattered, Lindir, he said. But
Lindir's in the Hall of Fire.
Mm-hmm. He's standing next to Bilbo.
Yeah, so let me switch back over to this picture and see if we can... oh, no, I think I took it from a different vantage point to cut them out.
Can you see my screen?
Let me go back over here. Yeah, just down there in the corner behind your microphone, driving listeners crazy.
So wait, is...
There he is.
So in Lotro, Bilbo's in the Hall of Fire.
He's standing right there.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
And Lindir's right there with him.
Right next to him.
All right.
So how is that? Okay, so now...
How fortuitous.
Now we had better have it again, said an elf. Bilbo got up and bowed. I'm flattered, Lindir, he said, but it would be too tiring to repeat it all. Yes, it would.
Oh, not too tiring for you, the elves answered, laughing. You know, you are never tired of reciting your own verses. But really, we cannot answer your question at one hearing. Answer your question.
Well, there's a question it posed in the... The question is, who wrote which parts?
Oh, okay, gotcha, okay.
Because Strider helped him. The Dúnedain helped him.
Yes, yes. And he even says that next. What? Cried Bilbo. You can't tell which parts were mine and which were the Dunedain's? It is not easy for us to tell the difference between two mortals, said the elf. Yeah, here we go. Mortal shaming right here. Nonsense, Lindir, snorted Bilbo. If you can't distinguish between a man and a hobbit, your judgment is poorer than I imagined. They're as different as peas and apples. Well, maybe. To sheep... Other sheep no doubt appear different, laughed Lindir, or to shepherds. But mortals have not been our study. We have other business.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Oh, and I missed a great opportunity there for Christian themes.
What you got?
To sheep, other sheep no doubt appear different, laughed Lindir, or to shepherds. Who's the great shepherd?
Well, Jesus.
Who's the good shepherd?
Yeah.
And my sheep... know my voice, and they won't answer to another's voice, and he knows them all by name. The good shepherd, a good shepherd knows his sheep by name. So yes, a shepherd can look at his flock and know every single sheep and know their name. Man, I missed that opportunity.
Golly, Willikers,
you inserted it there. So.
Well, I did. I just snuck that in. Listeners, go and read the 23rd Psalm and enjoy the Lord as my shepherd, I shall not want.
Hey, there you go. All right. Well, I won't argue with you.
Man, I missed that. Now I'm going to be dwelling on that. I'm sorry.
Said Bilbo. I'll just go back to your sitting and thinking.
Okay.
I am sleepy after so much music and singing. I'll leave you to guess if you want to. He got up and came towards Frodo. Well, that's over, he said in a low voice. It went off better than I expected. I don't often get asked for a second hearing. What do you think of that? What did you think of it? I am not going to try and guess, said Frodo, smiling. Oh, you needn't, said Bilbo. As a matter of fact, it was all mine. Except that Aragorn insisted on my putting in a green stone. He seemed to think that was important. Important. I don't know why.
Was it a barrel?
I have no idea.
The Barrel Stone of Glorfindel. Dun, 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 dun. Going back to some pirate themes.
Get out of here.
Oh,
get out of here. Otherwise, he obviously thought the whole thing rather above my head. And he said that if I had cheek to make verses about Arendelle and the House of Elrond, that was my affair. I suppose he was right. Oh, I don't know, said Frodo. It seemed to me to fit somehow, though I can't explain. I was half asleep when you began, and it seemed to follow on from something that I was dreaming about. I didn't understand that it was really you speaking until near the end. It is difficult to keep awake here until you get used to it, Bilbo said. Not that hobbits would ever acquire the elvish appetite for music and poetry and tales. They seem to like them as much as food, or more. They will be going on for a long time yet. What do you say to slipping off for some more quiet talk? Can we? Said Frodo. Of course, this is merrymaking, not business. Come and go as you like, as long as you don't make a noise. They got up and withdrew quietly into the shadows and made for the doors. Sam they left behind, fast asleep, still with a smile on his face. He's got his elves. He's happy. In spite of his delight in Bilbo's company, Frodo felt a tug of regret as they passed out of the Hall of Fire. Even as they stepped over the threshold, a single clear voice rose in song. All right, Micah, hit us with those elven lyrics.
No, thank you.
Okay.
I can't read any of those words.
Elbereth Gathaniel. And so we get back to, again... to Elbereth, and that's what the hymn that the elves with Gilda Radner they were singing, and when the constellation the swordsman of the sky came up over the hills. Let's just remind ourselves of who Elbereth was and this hymn, O stars that in the sunless year with shining hand by her were sown in windy fields now bright and clear, we see your silver blossom blown, from the hymn to Elbereth. Elbereth, Gathaniel, is the Sindarin word, and she was Varda. Varda. She was one of the Valar, right? She's the wife of Manwë. We're going to learn more about Manwë later on. She was the queen of the Valar. Elves love and revere her most of all, of all the Valar, we should say. And they call upon her in their hours of deepest darkness. Frodo adopted that practice. Because didn't he call for Elbereth at the Fort of Bruinen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And didn't he cry the name when he stabbed the Nazgul?
Wow. He has been discipled.
Yeah.
By the elves.
Yeah.
We call on the Queen of the Valar in our times, our hours of deepest darkness.
Oh, right.
She set the constellations to guide the elves, the Eldar, right? So let's remember that. This is the Queen of the Valar. This is who the elves call upon in their hours of deepest darkness. And Frodo is doing that same thing. Frodo halted for a moment, looking back. Elrond was in his chair, and the fire was on his face like summer light upon the trees. Near him sat the Lady Arwen. To his surprise, Frodo saw that Aragorn stood beside her. His dark cloak was thrown back, and he seemed to be clad in elven mail, and a star shone on his breast. They spoke together, and then suddenly it seemed to Frodo that Arwen turned toward him, and the light of her eyes fell on him from afar and pierced his heart. Carry on.
He stood still, enchanted, while the sweet syllables of the elvish song fell like clear jewels of blended word and melody. It is a song to Elbereth, said Bilbo. They will sing that and other songs of the blessed realm many times tonight. Come on. He led Frodo back to his own little room. It opened onto the gardens and looked south across the ravine of the Bruinen. There they sat for some while, looking through the window at the bright stars above the steep climbing woods and talking softly. They spoke no more of the small trees of the Shire, small news of the Shire far away, nor of the dark shadows and perils that encompassed them, but of the fair things they had seen in the world together, of the elves, of the stars, of the trees, and the gentle fall of the bright year in the woods. There you go. At last there came a knock on the door. Begging your pardon, said Sam, putting it in his head, but I was just wondering if you'd be wanting anything. And begging yours, Sam Gamgee, replied Bilbo. I guess you mean that it is time your master went to bed. Well, sir, there is a council early tomorrow, I hear, and he only got up today for the first time. Quite right, Sam, laughed Bilbo. You can trot off and tell Gandalf that he has gone to bed. Good night, Frodo. Bless me, but it has been good to see you again. There are no folk like hobbits, after all, for a real good talk. I'm getting very old, and I begin to wonder if I should live to see your chapters of our story. Good night. I'll take a walk, I think, and look at the stars of Elbereth in the garden. Sleep well.
What a beautiful end to the chapter.
Yeah.
Many meetings.
Mm-hmm.
What a fantastic chapter, and we learned a lot of things.
Many episodes.
Many episodes, many meetings, many chapters, many much, Moosen.
yeah, what?
Sorry. Nobody's going to get that out.
What did you think? What did you think of this chapter? Let's have a recap. Let's or a fireside chat.
I liked it. as I pull my microphone closer to my mouth, as I recline.
It was very refreshing. Like, we had just been...
Again, yeah. How was it refreshing, my young son,
well,
my Padawan?
We were just being chased by evils and almost dying and stuff, and then here we are in this peaceful place where you just fall asleep by being there, you know?
Where there is healing, mm-hmm. where there is rest, where there is recuperation, where there is comfort, where there is feasting, where there is song, where there is many meetings, where there are glad tidings.
Five-page-long poems.
Where there are... Yes, where there is warmth, where there is reminder, where there is edification, where there is remember what... Let's go hit this point again. I hope people aren't getting tired of this point. It's so important to me. Strider was encouraging the hobbits ever since Weathertop... When Frodo received that grievous wound, persevere, hope, trust me. If we make it to Elrond's house, the tables will be full, well laden. There will be feasting, there will be comfort, there will be all of those things that we described as the last homely house. And we had pointed out long ago that, to me, I was reminded of that upper room, that last time that Jesus had with his inner circle of disciples, the apostles, partaking of that Passover. I have longed to partake of this Passover with you. And it was his last time this side of the grave to speak with them. And he gives them words of comfort. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? In my Father's house, in his household, there are many dwelling places. Do you know that in that part of the world at that time, when a child was married, a lot of times they didn't go off and wander off. The father built a place at his house, a dwelling place for the children. It was very much like if you picture the Opryland Hotel, Brendan.
Okay.
If you're in that atrium, what do you have in the middle of that atrium? A garden.
It's been a while since the
garden.
Yeah.
And what do you see all around all of the hotel rooms?
Yeah.
Looking on this garden, that is really a picture of houses, dwelling places in Palestine at that time.
You said Opryland Hotel.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought I was thinking of the Opry House, like the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, there's not a garden.
So now you can...
But now I know what you're talking about, yes. And
so we're talking, you know, richer families, obviously.
Yes,
let's make that clear. The poor folks didn't have this kind of a setup.
Yeah.
But the son would marry, and he would have this wing of the place. And they all looked down onto the garden. That was the center, that walled garden. What's that? What's that word?
That paradise.
Paradise. That's what the word paradise means, and it comes actually from the Farsi and the Protestant languages, obviously. And this is what Jesus is describing. My Father is rich. In his house, there are many dwelling places, and I go to prepare a place for you. And it just looks like the last homely house to me. But let's seal this point, and I'll probably move on from this and never mention it again. You've heard it for 5 episodes now, I think. Because we did Weathertop was a couple of... Well, actually, my goodness. Probably been hearing it for since episode 1. Let's see what this looks like in the real world. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 14 through 15, Paul is writing to his protege Timothy. That is the context. That's the audience relevance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing these things to you, Timothy, says Paul. hoping to come to you before long. But in case I am delayed, I write so that you... Oh, goodness, this almost sounds like Gandalf, if he was able to get a message to Frodo. I'm hoping to come to you before long, but in case I am delayed, I write so that you will know how one ought to conduct himself in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and support of the truth. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. What does that make up? That makes up a household. That is a household. I write to you so that you will know how one ought to conduct himself in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and support of the truth. This is what I see at the last homely house east of the sea. I see the household of God, the church. No pun intended. I see the sea and the west of the sea and last house on the hill.
I got it.
Yeah. That's what it's been building up to. This is what we should experience as followers of the way, as disciples of Jesus Christ, as believers. What we experienced in this chapter. Took three episodes to experience all of this stuff, and it's a picture of the church.
There you go.
Any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
I'll go into you guys. I've stopped listening to the Rob Inglis.
What?
How dare you?
Because of the wonderful things he doesn't?
No. Just because reading it for myself, this started when I started listening to Rob read it and reading it along with him reading it. So it was like I was seeing the words as he was saying them. But then I just got to a point where I got to where I wanted to hear my own internal voice and put my own inflections and characters. And that's actually helped me internalize it a lot more.
Oh.
So that's just me. Now, that being said, when I picture the last homely house by the sea of Rivendell.
East of the sea.
East of the sea on the left. When I picture this last homely house, I see a lot of, and this may be influenced by the movie, of course.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of glass. I see a lot of transparent partitions. I see a lot of, because I'm looking at the picture in Lotro right now, and it's all walled in.
Well, that's the Hall of Fire.
That's the Hall of Fire.
Described as being, there is no light other than the fires.
Other than the fires. Get those tables
out of there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just very, and I know this harkens back to the film, because Bilbo is in Frodo's bedroom in the film, and it's very light. It's very sunny, very bright. So I guess maybe that's the impression I've gotten of Rivendell. But imposing that imagination onto the text, I don't know. I just like it better.
Good.
I just like it better.
Well, good.
And then I guess seeing the Hall of Fire, then remembering that the text describes, you know, the only light that comes in the Hall of Fire is from the fire itself. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. Using what Professor Tolkien wants his readers to use, you know, their imagination and all of his writings that talk about using the imagination.
And he's there to help you.
Yeah.
He's just recording. He just recorded a history.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Feigned. But still a history.
Yeah, feigned or real. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Good thoughts. Micah, anything else?
Nah.
No? You nailed it, huh?
He did.
Okay.
You need say no more.
Hey.
We'd best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No, don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
So, dear listeners, which part of this chapter, many meetings, which we have spent many podcasts on, which part stood out to you? And why? We want to hear from you, and we'll give you all the ways to contact us first. But before we get to that part, let's any party tree items. I mentioned, again, our YouTube channel. So when we record these videos live on our Twitch page, if you can't join us live and you want to watch us sit here talking, because it is fascinating to watch people sit and talk, you can go over on YouTube and just search for Secret Fire Podcast and be able to watch it after the fact. So just that little reminder. But I have, Brendan, for the first time ever, four kids, all four of my younglings, in a production of Willy Wonka.
Wow.
To be determined. I mean, we haven't, Maddie and I haven't auditioned yet.
So. Oh, well. Okay, but it's two different. Micah and, so my second, Micah and my third, Maddie, are in the H-STEP program, which is the homeschooling branch of, of the, whatever you call that. And then my number one and my number four are both in the...
It's the all ages one. It's just the public performance.
So it's not TAG or WAG or okay. So Haley is going to be Mrs. Beauregard. So Violet Beauregard's mom.
What? She has a mom?
Everybody has a mom.
Except the one that has a dad.
No, he's got a mom too.
No.
Yeah. Somewhere. Mm-mm. Maybe in heaven. So everybody has a mom. Okay.
No, I know, but in the story.
Yeah.
Was her mom a...
A mom?
I guess in the script. I don't know.
I don't know.
I haven't read the book in a while.
I haven't either. I just remember Willy Wonka on Finding Christ in Cinema.
Yeah, yeah. I just remember Violet having her dad. Like, oh, no, I'm going to have a blueberry for a daughter.
No, Violet had... Oh, whatever. I don't know.
That was Violet Beauregard.
Okay.
You're turning Violet, Violet.
And then my my youngest, my five-year-old, her very first role, she's going to be one of the chipmunks. Or the squirrels, I'm sorry.
Oh,
squirrel.
Yes. Oh,
finding the bad nuts.
A bad nut.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So all four kids.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. And so I thought that was worthy of the party tree. What's going on with you, Brendan? You have a lot of things going on.
Man. Grad school is finishing up. That's the biggest thing. Grad school is finishing up. The next big thing, at a very close second, if not tied, I'm directing a Doll's House in Shelbyville. At the Fly.
Direct, what are you going to have this Doll's House do? I mean, how do you direct a Doll's House?
It's a play, Michael.
Oh gosh. I'm sorry. I thought you were doing something.
No, it's a play. It's an 1879 play by Henrik Ibsen. We're working with a script from the public domain, but we've amped it up ourselves. Like, I, along with the cast, we've made choices that we think would be, that would make it easier for the audience to understand what's going on. Although the action in the play, there's nothing subtle about it. It's very clear and upfront and in your face. But it's really a passion project, because I've loved this play ever since I read it in undergrad back in 2010. And it'll grip you. It'll grip you. And it's very... Okay, so no spoilers, because it's only 150 years old. But it's about this woman whose name is Nora, and she basically, before the play starts, she saved her husband's life. She had to do some double dealing, and she had to be duplicitous in doing so, but the goal was to save her husband's life. Well, when he finds out about it through a loan shark who tries to blackmail her, because he's about to lose his job at the bank.
Sharky.
Yeah. He lost his position at the bank because of his... He made a mistake. And Nora's husband, Torvald, is the president of the bank. He is firing this guy. His name is Krogstad. Krogstad comes back to try to blackmail Nora to get his job back. Well, that falls through when Krogstad confesses to Torvald that he was trying to do this.
Is Bud Frump in this anywhere?
No.
Oh, okay.
But, oh, no.
A lot of double-dealing and backstabbing.
Yeah. Oh, it's, yeah. But the crux of it is, the whole time, Torvald treats Nora like she's a doll. That's why it's called a Doll's House, because this is Nora's life.
Okay.
He treats her like property. He treats her like a commodity. Chattel. Like a child.
Chattel.
Chattel.
Chattel. Yeah, it's property. Living property.
I thought you were trying to say cattle, and I was like, he's
not being serious.
Well,
cattle is part of chattel.
Chattel.
But okay. So are slaves.
Yeah. He just treats her like a trophy wife. He only uses her to make himself look good. She realizes that, and then back in 1879, it was just unheard of for a wife to leave her husband. But at the end of the play, she leaves Torvald. And she says, look, you even said yourself, I'm not fit to be your wife. I'm not fit to raise your kids. Here you go. So he heads out, or she heads out, rather. And what I want to focus on with the production is that it's not just husband and wife relationships that are affected like this. There are people that use other people for personal gain, for selfish gain, and personal prominence. And...
That's what Oskar Schindler was.
You think so?
And then he turned into not you doing those same things, but not for self, but for others.
Yeah, but to save other people's lives. Yes. Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Listeners, so. Brendan and I just finished episode number 148 of Finding Christ in Cinema, wherein we discussed 1993's epic Schindler's List. Mm. That's why that popped to mind. Chattel is personal property. Is generally considered property that is movable as opposed to real property or real estate.
Like real estate. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
See how much you can learn.
Vocab of the day.
Yeah. Here on the Secret Fire podcast. Chattel. Well, I want to talk. I'm doing something that's theater related too, and I'm working with the folks at the local radio station and MRC, Millennial Repertory Company, to produce some radio dramas. And so we're looking for a script right now, and then we'll put together the cast, and we'll record them, and I'll edit it and produce the thing, and we'll be airing that on the local radio station. So
it's Millennium, not Millennial.
Sorry, Millennial. Millennium. The Millennium Falcon Repertory Company. But
there's a lot of millennials there.
Yep. Yes. Too true. That's why I said it. Anyway, that was a lot of stuff at the party tree. So we'll go ahead and move on, send out some party invitations for next week. We're going to talk about...
The Council of Elrond, part one.
Hey!
Because let's be honest.
Yeah.
Already prefacing
yeah.
it with the one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, boy. But before we go, the Secret Fire podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video on our Twitch page at twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast.
And you can join us on the Arkenstone server and Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
To find out more about the Secret Fire podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and The Theonauts, visit our main website at gctnetwork.com.
You can send us an email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com, or you can call us up on the Hobbit Hotline and leave a voicemail. Fatty Bulger is standing by.
Who is that odd little fellow?
Fatty Bulger.
Yes.
Yes. At 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/secretfirecast, but let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
We do.
You can go to iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher and search them all for the Secret Fire podcast.
Yes, our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-earth by Brobdignagian Bards. Find out more about them and buy music by visiting their website at thebards.net. And until next time...
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. I bid you all a very fond farewell.
Goodbye!
Farewell!
Peace! It was tied to Elbereth.
Oh, man, that'd be...
Tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
At GCTnetwork.com.